This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan with Lim Soo Ann and Kelly Anisa. So here are our stories today.
With all the latest news on bullying lately, we take a look at the psychology of a bully and what would be the best way to approach the issue and who is responsible for overseeing this behaviour.
And on our second story, so the National Union of the Teaching Profession, or the NUTP, has recently called for the abolishment of the UPSR, but there's still quite a lot of conflicting views on this issue, especially when it comes to parents. So we'll be discussing how this would impact the learning experience in primary schools.
And on that note, we are asking you on Twitter, how do you feel about national exams at the primary school level? Your options are yes, they are important, or B, no, they are unnecessary.
Obviously, you're very used to taking exams here.
Exactly. So you can take that poll on Twitter at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
So before we get to our first story, here is Wouldn't It Be Nice by the Beach Boys.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
That was the Beach Boys with Wouldn't It Be Nice. And now our first story.
So yesterday, a few news portals published articles that a university in the United States is facing a lawsuit from the family of a Malaysian student who studied there. The student had committed suicide due to alleged bullying. So we won't be getting to into the specifics of that case as it is still a developing story. However, this has come on top of some of other high-profile bullying cases in the past few years.
Yeah, and the most recent case that we've seen is the one involving University Pertahanan Nasional Malaysia Cadet Officer Zulfarhan Osman Zulkarnain. And Zulfarhan was believed to have been abused after being accused of stealing a friend's laptop. And this took place back in 2017. But the High Court only recently ordered the 18 students of the University Pertahanan Nasional Malaysia's to enter their defence on charges of murdering and injuring Zulfarhan.
And another high-profile case involved T. Navin, who was bullied and tortured by a group of teenagers near his home on June 9th last year. The teens had also allegedly bullied him in school, and he remained comatose for 6 days before passing away on June 15th.
So these were some of the high-profile cases, but they aren't isolated. This happens to plenty of children and young adults. But why does it continue to happen despite the awareness brought on by these deaths? You know, perhaps the answer lies in the bully itself. I spoke to Dr. Joel Low earlier today. He is a clinical psychologist, about the psychology of a bully and what would be the best way to approach this issue and who is responsible for overseeing this behavior. Here is a clip from that interview. So can you just explain to me the psychology of a bully? You know, how does it differ from those who are kids in school to those who are in tertiary education, like in college or university? You know, is there a difference from being an adult and a kid in that situation in, as a bully? Because, yep. You know, an argument I always hear is that bullies are insecure. They are bullied themselves at home, perhaps. But, you know, how does that treatment at home spill over into how they behave in other environments?
Yeah. So I think to answer the first part of the question, I don't think there is very much significant difference between a bully who is in high school, primary school, kindergarten, in the working environment or in the family or whatever it is. Right? I think ultimately they all are bullies for similar reasons, right? And I think that argument or that idea or the hypothesis that the reason why they're bullied is because they're insecure stands true in a lot of cases. I think the major difference between a high school bully and a workplace bully or a university bully, I think, it's the manner in which they bully, right? Mm-hmm. So I think as kids, as children, what resources we have available to us is things like name-calling, like pushing around or getting physical with you, for example, or isolating you, right? But as we mature and get older as adults, you know, we learn a lot more different ways that we can enact our bullying, in a sense, or pushing around our power, for example, right? And that's, I think, the major thing that changes, right? Mm. Now, going back to the other part of your question, you know, why do they bully? I think a lot of times insecurity, low self-esteem, being bully victims themselves, these are actually quite common themes that you find in a lot of bullies, like, in that sense, right? Obviously, there's no one way to generalize one feature in all bullies, right? But a lot of times you see that in many, many cases of bullying, whether they're children or adults, one of the main constant themes that you hear is that they themselves are very insecure, right? And that bullying that they do, the exertion of power that they do, it's almost like a shield or a mask that they have on to try and prevent themselves from being hurt. So it's the whole adage, the whole idea, like, you know, if I hurt you first, you can't hurt me. That kind of thing. So I think that's what's what typically goes on in the mind of a bully. Mm-hmm.
So why do these bullies often target minorities, you know, especially on the basis of race, of sexuality, for example? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've read a few cases about how orang asli kids also get bullied in schools.
Yep. I think this happens because with bullying, the idea of concept of bullying, with it comes with it the notion of power, like, in a sense, right? When someone is bullied, power transfer takes place, right? So if I'm the bully here, for example, I have a lot more power. I take power away from my victim, right? Yeah. So I think naturally because of that, if you are part of the majority, part of the big group, right, rather than the smaller group or the minority, then you tend to have more power, and that idea of power, I suppose, lends to the bully's ability to go and say, okay, I can bully you now. Because I know that if I bully a person who's in the minority or can't defend themselves as well, then I am safe, right? I can continue my bullying activities. Mm. It's like saying, instead, for example, if I go and bully the big dog in the school, for example, or the guy who's the majority, right? What's going to happen then is that I'll be in trouble, because then this person will have a lot more resources to call upon, and I might be the victim after that, right? So going back to my earlier statement about how a lot of bullies actually feel very low self-esteem, and then they feel that they are not the most confident people in the world, obviously they want to do things that will reinforce their power, reinforce their self-esteem, and then their confidence in themselves, rather than take it away. So naturally, they will want to attach themselves to the big group and attack the smaller groups, like that sense, groups which have less power, less ability to protect themselves. So that's why you see a lot of minority groups, whether it's race or gender or LGBTQ populations or what have you, right? These are normally the victims of abuse, like that sense, or bullying. Yeah.
Speaking of that, because like you said, these populations that are this group of people, this group of minorities are often the targets because they are pretty much defenseless. Do you think we are taking bullying seriously enough? Do you think, are we just undermining this as just a part or a phase that most kids or most students have to go through?
Yeah. I think there are efforts being taken, even in Malaysia as well. There are lots of anti-bullying campaigns and all that kind of good stuff done on multiple levels, on a nationwide level, on a school level. So there are many things that are being done. Mm. I think the problem here is the fact that it's too difficult to try and pinpoint one specific area to then target and then fix the bullying problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Can I say that? Because, like, okay, so a lot of times, a lot of campaigns, like, traditionally, we focus on the victims. How do we empower the victims? How do we help the victims recover and all that kind of good stuff? And also, at the same time, how do we put down the bullies, right? So we try and take away their power and say, no, you know what? Bullies are not cool. You know, report the bullies. We'll take action. We'll stand up against them, and then we'll be fine, right? That's the more traditional approach. But increasingly, what you find is that when victims fight back, or when people fight back against bullies, they tend to step up their game, right? They get even more aggressive. So, if I'm not mistaken, recently, I think the UNH, I can't remember who, an organization actually did an anti-bullying campaign focusing on the bullies, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, what they're trying to do is that, because if the bullies are insecure, the bullies have no self-esteem, if we can target the bullies and help them build up their self-esteem and make them feel more comfortable in their own skin, that desire to take away power from other people or to exert control or to bully people goes away, right? So that's another area or angle to try and approach the situation. Go even further, then where does the insecurity and the low self-esteem comes from, right? So then you go down to the aspect of the family unit, the community at large, society at large, right? Mm-hmm. So is this crazy big cycle that you have to tackle? And I think that's why it's so difficult to end bullying or do something about bullying, because there's so much that can be done and needs to be done.
But what are your thoughts on, you know, legal reforms when it comes to bullying? Because we do have provisions that cover harassment or causing harm or hurt to others. But do you think that having a specific law that targets bullying, because it involves a lot of cases, at least it involves children, and I think that's where the reluctance come from. You know, would that help drive home the message that bullying is unacceptable in our culture and in our values?
I'm always very apprehensive when you want to use legal reforms to deal with a very social issue, right, or almost cognitive, psychological, emotional issue. And the reason why I say that is because it's very easy to then pin the blame on the bully and then to target the bully and then and punish the bully, right? And then because of that, you assume that the whole bullying problem will go away, right? I think by doing so, the only thing that you're going to propagate is that whole, the bullies are just going to be bigger bullies when they come out or when they are released from their detention or punishment or whatever it is, right? So I don't think that, I think that can be a part of the process, right?
Mm.
But I think to use that as the main driving force to eliminate bullying at all level, any level, right? Either be it at the school children level or the adult level, it's going to be very, very narrow, it's a very narrow-minded way to approach it in that sense, right? Yeah. Because ultimately, you know, there's always going to be another bully. It's just a matter of where and how and who the bully is going to be, right?
Mm.
And another issue with the whole legal perspective is also is what's the definition of bullying then, right? Because there's so many different kinds of bullying, right? So, like, for example, the more outward or physical or obvious kind of bullying is I'll punch you or I'll push you around, I take your food, right? That's the ones we are quite used to. What about the kind of bullying that stems from social isolation, alienation, right? What are the kind of bullying that, you know, I'll gang up with all my 10 other friends and say, look, I'm not going to invite you out for dinner. We're going to make it very obvious we're going for dinner plans, for example, and then I'll leave you out of it, right?
Mm.
And in that way, you're trying to alienate that person, right? How would you then try and legalize that or look at, take it from a legal perspective? Because you can't. But it's so vague, like, in a sense, right? So
yeah.
I think a legal approach would be very... It has to be a part of the process, I think. But for it to be the main driving force, I really don't think so. It's too vague, like, I think, for us to be able to do that, I think.
Hmm. And Dr. Joe, last question. Could you just very briefly perhaps sum this up for us? Who should be held accountable for the act of bullying within, you know, institutions? Should it be the bully itself, their parents, or is it the school or the institution?
I'm going to give you a not very good answer, and my answer would be everyone. Right.
Mm.
I don't think any one party should be blamed for what happens when a bullying case occurs, right? So let's say, for example, a bullying happens in a university, like the case that we're hearing about right now, of late, right?
Mm.
The bullier, of course, is to blame. The supervisor is to blame. The school is to blame. The friends are to be blamed. The victim himself, has reached out to so many people, and yet so many people have turned her down or rejected her or have ridiculed her claims and all that kind of things, right? And I think even as a society, you know, when we are open or when we realize about things happening, right? I know there have been reports about friends making reports and things like that. But again, is that enough, right? I mean, when we can see so clearly that the abuse is happening, the bullying is happening, could we not have done more? Could we not have reached out and approached the bully themselves, right? So ultimately, I think there's no one to be blamed because I think everyone is to blame. I think we have shared responsibility for what happens in our culture and in the people that we have in our society.
That was Dr. Joe Low. He is a clinical psychologist. So, you know, Suan and Sharmila, what do you think, you know, do you agree with what Dr. Joel said, that enacting a law for bullying specifically may not be the best way to curb social issues like this?
Well, I think... Dr. Joel had a good point in that bullying extends into being a much more complex problem than just a single act or a single issue. And when it comes to a lot of the physical harms in particular that can be inflicted on someone because of bullying, we do have laws to deal with those things for physical intimidation or for actual physical harm, things like that. Or, you know, in some of the worst case scenarios for when someone loses their life.
Mm.
However, I am... as of yet, a little bit on the fence about how to criminalize something like bullying, because how do you prove it happened? How do you get people to talk about it in a way that you can talk about in court, for instance?
Yeah.
And again, there's that thing. At what age then can you, you know, prosecute someone for bullying if they were 17 is very different from if they were 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Do they know what they're doing? And if bullying is a crime, it's a very serious brand to put on someone too, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's something I hear a lot when I bring this up with people. So my stance is that I do think that bullying should be criminalized only because we've seen what it could result in, right? And that's where I disagree with a lot of the points that some people say that, oh, they are children and therefore that's where that reluctance comes from. But being a child at 13 or even at 8 years old, I remember that, you know that it's wrong to hit someone or to tease someone for the way that they look or for, you know, the way they behave. So I don't think that quite justifies why we shouldn't criminalize the act of bullying. You know, why do we have to wait for someone to die before we start criminalizing it as murder? Mm. You know, when we could save so many lives before that.
Sorry, go on.
No, I mean, and I think an important part of criminalizing bullying is that we need to make sure that we're not just punishing the people who are prosecuted for bullying, for example. We need to understand that we need to provide them with counseling. They need to understand why it's wrong, and they need to understand, you know, what they should have done.
So the sort of the punitive action is the end point of a process that needs to happen as well.
Yeah.
And that brings up a fairly important question in this whole thing, right? Because most of the time when these things come out at the end, you realize that the events didn't happen in isolation. Usually there are cases of the bullying victim having tried to reach out to adults or people who were in the power, who held power in the situation to stop these things from happening. And often they weren't taken seriously or they were dismissed or not enough was done. And so there are also other people in the situation who failed to act. And these things, that needs to be recognized as well, that usually these things don't just happen and no one knew about it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Because it's just like with young doctors and housemanships, for example.
Yeah.
People think that bullying or going through this so-called difficult phases are part and parcel of growing up.
Ragging, right? Which happens in other universities as well.
Exactly. And it may have been part and parcel of growing up at a certain time, but that doesn't make it right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when we can find a way to fix toxic behavior and environments, we should take the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and sort of that mentality that, oh, because I went through it, it's fine if the next batch of students go through it as well.
Yeah, but it's understanding that it's a different time, it's a different place. Perhaps what you went through is a product of that time versus nowadays. We need to understand that, you know, that doesn't have, not everyone needs to go through the same difficult phase as you did.
You needn't perpetuate a toxic cycle. Yeah. You can actually be in the position to stop it.
Exactly. And I mean, just doing research for this show itself, I mean, I came across so many different cases, and these are cases I've read about, I know, these past few years, but just thinking back about how all of this have happened and we still haven't done anything about it is very worrying.
Mm. Well, we do need to wrap up this discussion, but if you have any thoughts to share on bullying, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Call us at 03-7733-2900. We are having a poll going on Twitter that is related to our upcoming story.
Yes, so we are asking you, how do you feel about national exams at the primary school level? So your options are yes, they are important, or no, they are unnecessary. So you can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or call us at 03-7733-2900.
So we'll be back after a short break, but first here's Curls with Gentle and Kind.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.